Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolcast. Bud will have a very open, honest discussion here, try to make sense of what we've seen, try to be as candid as possible with people, also try to answer a decent amount of questions that have continued to come in, and we don't necessarily want to get into a pattern of just answering questions every pod, but some of these are particularly well-worded and directed in areas that we were otherwise going to try to speak on tonight. So I think it's a good little roadmap that we have in front of us just from what we've had sent to us from the viewers. So as always, want to start this podcast by thanking Louisiana Hot Sauce, thank them for the leadership that they've provided and what we've been able to do with this podcast over time. Ask that you always keep them in mind as you make your grocery decisions and any support that you can lend to us, while also mentioning them on social media is always always wildly appreciated and makes what is not a particularly easy season to navigate, at least let you know how many people are still involved and engaged in the program. And there's a ton of different options for content out there, and always want to thank our listeners for engaging with us and our sponsors in any way that they feel comfortable and appropriate.
Yeah, man, absolutely. We know that, you know, we've earned your trust, and then our listenership numbers keep going up as you tell each other via word of mouth. And look, hopefully that's because of consistency and quality of product, right? And that's something you get with Louisiana Hot Sauce as well. You're getting the same great flavor every time. You know it's going to make your meal just a little bit better. And, you know, obviously a great price point as well. Goes on a lot of stuff. So Louisiana Hot Sauce, the option to spice up your meal.
Now the uncomfortable part. Yeah. All right, bud. So Florida State didn't just lose. They got, you know, they got embarrassed, humiliated. What was coming?
Just by inches, though.
Just by inches. A lot of inches in 35-3. But, man, when I went down to watch this game with my best friend, and he kind of sarcastically looked at me and said, well, at least we won't get shut out tonight, when Aguirre made the field goal, I didn't realize at the time exactly how ominous of a comment that was.
They were just terrible, dude. I mean, part of me just doesn't even want to break down the game. I do want to address something, though. On the last podcast, or the last, you know, preview show, not the instant reaction, I said I thought this was still a decent team that had played a really tough schedule. And at the time, I don't necessarily think I was wrong. But I no longer believe that, because they've shown the ability, or just the willingness, to just totally quit on their coaches. Not to quit playing hard, but to quit playing as a team. This is now a collection of individuals. These coaches have not earned their trust, and they don't really deserve their trust, to be honest, because they've done a really poor job. That's the fault of Jimbo Fisher for failing to be the steward of this program that he is tasked with being, and handsomely rewarded for being. He's not lived up to those duties. And he's allowed the staff to become stale. And look, at some point, the players sense it, and they end up playing hero ball. They play for themselves. In fact, Fisher even told him to do so, if you recall. He said, the team goals are now gone, but you have NFL goals. You have goals for playing time next year. Go out and show that. NFL teams are watching. Well, they did. So a lot of guys playing for themselves out there, and I don't blame them. I would do the exact same thing if I was in their position. Now the problem is you got four or five more games to go, man. I mean, we're having conversations that we normally, even under the worst of circumstances, would not be having until Thanksgiving. Tomorrow's Halloween. We're kind of a month ahead of schedule with this nonsense.
Well, I mean, there've been so many things wrong with this season, and that's part of it. When you find yourself in a place that you are, and you keep, as a coach, keep kind of going to the next option, the next motivational option. I mean, once you say screw it, you need to play for yourself, there's not really another retreat to go to and try to pull people in and have them buy into the message. I mean, that. And to hear that out of, what was that, after week four, week five, from the same guy who said, you make the helmet doesn't make you, and all this guy that's preached this collectiveness of the program, and he's right too, and certainly executed it beautifully for a period of time. But just a departure from the consistency of the message that surrounded his time here, and a card that when you play it in week four, week five, there's not a whole lot of other things in your deck left to throw out.
Jimbo Fisher is a coach right now who I think understands that the program is screwed up, but I don't believe he knows how to fix it. Not yet. I'm not saying he can't figure it out, and I do think he deserves the opportunity to do so. I mean, certainly his track record suggests that he deserves the opportunity to make the changes and fix it. But I don't know that he necessarily knows what to do. I mean, he admitted as much to Jeff Cameron when he said, I've never really been on a losing team.
Right.
He's grasping at straws, man. He's desperate.
It was kind of a strange comment in and of itself to talk about you playing quarterback at whatever that was called, FCS. Prior FCS. Yeah, thank you. The old bowl. Non-bowl subdivision. Yeah, I don't know that he knows either, because we've seen what he's tried to do. We saw last year. We saw promissory notes and things like that, and that appeared to be a Band-Aid, but certainly didn't make Matthew Thomas continue to pursue real hard in this game or all sorts of other very, very questionable exertions of effort by all sorts of different players out there. So, I mean, there's been a problem here, and you've been able to paper over some cracks, but 35-3 is the falling out, and at the very least, there is no more inches talk. There is no more, well, we could be 5-1 if our quarterback wasn't injured or anything.
Oh, there
else.
Was a little bit today, though.
Wow. Yeah, there was
today.
Did you
see it? I'll read the quote real fast. But
that was tough.
So Jimbo Fisher was being asked about changes, and Corey Clark asked him, like, significant changes, you know, drastic changes, and or more moderate changes. And Jimbo was like, well, why drastic? At the end of the day, I'll say this, you're 2-5, but you're one possession. If we get the stop at Miami when we scored and we win the other games at the end of the game, I mean, you're sitting there at 4-2, 5-2. Are you really any different? This is what I keep saying. You are, as far as record-wise and perception and probably confidence and reality and some of those different things that allow you to push forward. But at the same time, those are the same issues.
The whole second part of that was nothing. I mean, there's not a thought in there, really. That is not a
reality-based comment.
Well, no, and I was going to say, the first part is gibberish and the second part is just filler coach speak. Let me kind of round off an answer with 20 seconds of nothingness. So
it's not comforting when I have to think to myself, God, I hope this head coach doesn't believe the things he's saying.
That is an ugly, ugly quote.
But that's what I have to think. I'm like, I have to think, okay, well, Jimbo's just so full of it. But inside he knows, right? Right? I mean, got to hope so, because it doesn't appear to be so. Doesn't look like he has his stuff together. We've been having so many questions about all the rumors around this program right now. You want to just tackle these real quick?
Let's tackle them. We can, on either end, give a pretty good answer as to what's going on, as good as we can.
I've grouped all these together, all right? And we're just going to ask these, and we can figure out which ones to tackle first. Can you address the following rumors? Was there a fight between the coaches after the Boston College game? Did a coach really take a commercial flight back instead of flying with the team? Have coaches already told Jimbo they're resigning? Has Jimbo already told any coach he's not going to bring them back? Did a coach really quit during practice, or coaches? You got any of those you want to tackle?
Yeah, I don't want to speak to the Boston College situation. I'll let you do that. That's a little too...
I wasn't there.
Yeah, and that's a little too... It's not great going reporting stuff that happened within the last 72 hours, stuff like that. Better to let that breathe and come out in a little bit of a better perspective. You can comment on the commercial flight. I'm not sure about that either way, and you may have a better line of information. Have coaches already told Jimbo they're resigning? Did coaches really quit during practice? I'm pretty confident in saying that one or two coaches have walked out of a practice in the past 2 to 3
absolutely.
Weeks.
Absolutely. Yes. Was told that by players' parents.
That has happened. Has Jimbo told anyone that he's not retaining them? I don't know if he's told them that explicitly, but there's been some duties taken away from people that would be like... indicative of them staying on the staff. When I said that you're going to hear about coaching changes first through the recruiting trail last week, that's kind of what I'm referencing. I think that's what you'll see. I don't know if anybody's been explicitly said they're not being retained. Maybe in a moment of a heated exchange, one person has. I don't know when there, but that's been told to me now that I think about it.
Was there fights in front of players? I don't know about physical fights. There certainly have been some arguments that I don't know if the staff wanted to have in front of players. The commercial flight thing, I wasn't on the commercial flight. However, there's definitely a Snapchat of a guy that looks an awful lot like one of Florida State's coaches on a flight back to Tallahassee. So that's possible.
That's possible. I will say this, that you have two pretty significant conflicts within your coaching staff on either side of the ball right now as well. So it's not a healthy situation. Ultimately, there's a whole lot wrong with the culture, and that's something that's going to have to be addressed.
Some guys not speaking to each other.
Yeah, not speaking to each other.
Maybe one coach challenging another to a fight during a meeting.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. Things that are 180 degrees from where you want to be as a program.
So anyway, I hope that answers or addresses some of the rumors.
The fun part of the Nolcast right there.
I was also told, but I cannot confirm, that they brought in an outside defensive consultant to look at the defense. But again, it's not like you get Freedom Information Act requests back instantly. And I have no idea if that's true or not. That's something I am looking into, though. Thinking of the next 2 to 4 years, would you rather keep Jimbo Fisher as a coach or go after somebody like Willie Taggart? I like Jimbo, but I don't see him getting the program back on track to compete for a title. Whew, that's man, we got the hard-hitting questions right off the bat tonight, dude. People are coming out swinging. I would rather go with a different coach because I think the track record of coaches getting things back to the top after they win a title is extremely bad. It just doesn't happen for the most part. Check it out. We've done this before, too. Like, what year do you win a title in? For the most part, it's not year 8 or 9 unless your name is Nick Saban. It's new coaches that can get a program from 70% buy-in to 100. It's very hard to go from like 85 to 100 for some reason. Usually the bigger gap, the easier it is somehow. I think that's because if you're a new coach, you can go into place and you can literally get the full buy-in by saying, hey, what the last guy did didn't work. So we are going to do it my way, as opposed to when players come in, they just expect things to happen and they expect to be transformed into national championship type players, right? You know, there's a certain, like the enemy of great is good, you know?
I also think that that coach doesn't owe you anything, and it's pretty incumbent upon you that you're going to have to completely earn everything when a lot of times when you get somebody turning in, as far as the existing roster that he inherits.
Right.
So it's different. You get a good existing roster, you put one or two recruiting classes of your guys, plug them in, and you have the formula that's won a whole lot of national championships recently. You have the same formula that's putting together a 7-0 season in Athens right now.
This is not to say I don't think that Jimbo has the ability to do it. I just think the odds are against him, and those are separate things. I also think he does deserve the opportunity to make the changes, and he'll get it because he's owed $40 million, and then Florida State can't afford to fire him anytime in like the next half decade.
So that was another thing from this weekend, but I was going to bring up, and in my opinion, Friday night, what was so disturbing about it is the result, obviously, that played out, and we all sat there and watched. But I think the idea that somebody's going to come in and hire Jimbo Fisher away from you is not in play right now.
Because
the product on the field is not pairing with a program that's going to come and spend massive amounts of money. I think Jimbo Fisher has an incredible resume and has done great things, but he doesn't run the type of offense that a lot of programs want to run. There's a pretty nasty contrast in record when he doesn't have a transcendent quarterback. And I think the shine, look, one game isn't going to change a whole lot, but when you're having the type of season that you're having and then you lose 35-3 on Friday night to Boston College, I don't see a realistic situation where a major program's coming in here and trying to hire Jimbo Fisher.
Unless he can really sell it as, hey, this was just one bad year, look at my other stuff. I was kind of handcuffed, blah, 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 whatever.
Maybe. I could be wrong. And there's going to be a whole lot of slots on the coaching merry-go-round. So maybe Tennessee decides that. Maybe, who knows? But
I think he would do extremely well, by the way, if he went somewhere else. I really do. I think Jimbo Fisher's chance of succeeding elsewhere is greater than his chance of getting FSU back on top if he were to go elsewhere. Like, I think he would have that renewed passion, that renewed fire. I think that the newness of Jimbo Fisher, he would not have, worn people around him down, right? He wouldn't have people around him resent him for his management style at a new place immediately. I think he could go in and kick butt at an A&M or Auburn. I really do. I think he is a mercenary-type coach like that.
How does the Florida situation impact Florida State? Timetable, battling for coaches, poaching coaches?
It matters a lot. Because now, if you're Florida, by the way, we called this. I don't know if Judson can insert this, but this was in our Tuesday show. Do you think he's required by some law to report that? If it's a threat against a student? And if so, if you're Florida, do you try to use that to terminate his contract? And I think I said, Ingram, are you watching this? Because we were recording at like 10 o'clock at night. You're like, what? And I said, Florida just like threw their coach under the bus with like a statement that I really don't think you would make unless you were looking to fire him for cause. Well, Edgar, I think we got this one right.
No supporting details, bud. He offered no supporting details. That's not a statement you put out if you're in somebody's corner.
What an idiot. Anyway, he just cost himself $9 million if that ESPN report's right. That's really bad. It's also not good for Florida State that UF was able to basically get rid of Jim McElwain on the cheap. That's bad. Because that means Florida is, if you want to hire a coach, there's a couple things you want. Number one, you want money to be able to do it. You don't want to be encumbered with a huge buyout of the guy you just had to fire. Number two, you want to be the best job on the market. And unless like a Texas or a USC or Ohio State or Bama or something opens up, Florida seems, am I missing anybody here? I don't think so. Like, they seem overwhelmingly likely to be the number one job on the market, which means that they're going to have their pick of the litter and they're going to have the money to get the guy they want and to buy him a really nice staff. That's not good news for a Florida State program that's in total disarray right now at all. It's also that they did it this early means they can start talking to guys without having to sneak around, you know, and they can get the jump on everybody. So the timing of this really isn't great for Florida State. The only thing here, and I mean, I know you're going to disagree with me a little bit on this might be a bit of a wake-up call for Jimbo, right? That like, hey, firing a coach or two is not going to get it done. You need to fire six or seven of your coaches, and you need to get a premier staff in here, and you need to get one that's going to be a lot younger, more African-Americans, more diverse on the staff, better relate to young people. You need to get one that's going to be able to recruit a lot better. Because I got news for you. Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott could easily have been recruiters for FSU over the last couple of years when you had Florida and Miami screwing around down, and you had Florida State coming off a national title, three ACC championships, and about a billion draft picks. But they're 11-17 in their last 28 FBS games dating back to January of 2015. So now that product you have to sell is not nearly as good, and there's more losses coming too. So you're going to have to get a lot better recruiters in here as opposed to the staff of old guys that really didn't do very much. Man, this is not good. They got to start fighting fire with fire here.
No, it's not good, and I certainly agree with what you're saying. I would say that if it took external circumstances to be the catalyst for change, then that's pretty concerning in my opinion. I mean, just when you look around, there's a lot of things. If you're Florida State, before old McElwain gifted them a $10 million get-out-of-jail-for-free card with what is really one of the dumber statements I just can't wrap my mind around the fact that that guy actually said that, and then that series of events played out that way. But look, there's a lot of things going on in the landscape of college football that are concerning when you look at Florida State and you just look at the ability to put together a roster. You've done incredibly well in Virginia and D.C. and Maryland area. That area is going to get a whole hell of a lot harder to recruit with what Virginia Tech's doing, with what obviously Penn State lost on the weekend, but Penn State's an emerging force and is going to have a presence in that area. Miami is looking to put themselves in as good a place as possible to recruit at a high level and have a coach that is at least competent and knows how to run a program. Georgia is going to be a pain in the ass for anyone in the Southeast trying to recruit right now. And Clemson has done nothing but absolutely replace you as the cream of the conference and one of the national powers in all of college football. So Alabama's still Alabama. There's a ton of things out there, but the landscape has changed pretty significantly over the past 8 months or so, and none of it's been good for Florida State. So I would hope that concern would have come up prior to Florida getting gifted such a ridiculous contractual situation here. And like you said, they're going to have the money to hire a head coach and also give him all the tools that he would need to succeed. But I would have hoped that concern would have come about long before just a series of events over the last 5 or 6 days in Gainesville.
Ingram, to me, there are three things that could happen for a state's program. Number one, Jimbo Fisher really makes serious changes, not only to the coaching staff, but also looking inward, gets some sleep, doesn't look like a damn zombie that hasn't slept in ages and scares people like, you know, when they see him in person. Number two, he doesn't, and the program starts to fall considerably. And it takes several years before they can actually get the money together to buy him out from that ridiculous contract. Or number three, he jumps jobs and Florida State hires a new badass staff and they go in and they kick butt again. I don't think there's any other real possibility here. Just those three. Two of those are good. One of them's bad. I don't know which one is more likely. Although I think the something there kind of scares me. But man, you're exactly right. Georgia's not playing around. They're running the Alabama plan better than Jimbo did. right, as far as infrastructure and recruiting and building. Florida, you got to like their odds of getting a better candidate, don't you, than McElwain this time around. Foley, for all the job that he did get Urban Meyer, he also hired Ron Zook. He hired Will Muschamp, and he hired Jim McElwain. He was 1-for-4. Now, the one was a grand slam, but he also kind of had 3 strikeouts there.
Wasn't the one a byproduct of the president's relationship with Meyer as much as it was Foley?
Yes, and some real kind of clairvoyance by Meyer to actually pick UF over Notre Dame because of the ability to get players.
Mm-hmm.
What is the importance of having a football-only facility? Is there some quantifiable benefit to having a football-only facility, or is it just a situation where coaches just want a shiny new toy? What is the possibility we end up losing 2 of our Dynamo assistant coaches, Tino and Addison? Any possibility we hire them to be full-time coaches? Thanks, guys, and keep up the good work. Let's take the first part of this first. Football-only facility has some importance. It has some importance in terms of being able to basically keep your team at the facility the entire day, which means you get to coach them a little more, if we're being practical here. Benefit to the student-athlete, not sure that it has a ton, but I think it has some. Certainly, it's a toy to be used in recruiting, and it's something that, until the college football bubble bursts, and I think at some point it will, it's something that you kind of have to have to keep up with the Joneses in recruiting. But I don't think not having one hurts Florida State right now. I really don't. I think it's just something that, you know, Jimbo always looking for the next thing to demand from the boosters. And if I'm the boosters right now, I wouldn't give it to them. I'd say, we're interested in that, but we're also interested in seeing you make serious staff changes. And, you know, if you don't, then we don't really need to be spending our money on this. We might need to be spending money on a buyout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that you can't do both, but I do think that, man, the momentum for that, if I had to guess, is probably slowed a little bit.
It's dead. It's dead in the water right now. I mean, I can fully confident in saying that there's not going to be. First of all, Jimbo, I would argue, maybe overplayed his card in extent with one of these things. Well, I'm saying 5 or 6 months ago, with some of the costs that were being thrown around. 2, the season has gone into the trash. 3, there's been a lot of decisions, and Bud, maybe next podcast or something, we could look at, evaluate just some decision making that's taken place surrounding the program. But it wasn't like a massive comment, but that comment that he made in after week 2 or whatever about the little changes that have been made around here since he's been there, I can tell you that it didn't alienate himself from tons of people, but it didn't sit well with some people at all. I mean, there's been people that
including
have
big boosters who we know
exactly who've dug pretty deep to have given Jimbo what he has wanted and what has been his kind of fascination du jour.
Do you want me to read the comment, by the way?
Please.
All right. This is Jimbo, and this was on his September 13th call-in show, which this is just I can't believe he really thinks what he says. Quote, "We've got to get up, get caught up," Fisher said in his weekly call-in show Wednesday night. "We haven't done anything for a long time here. We did when we first got here. We made a few little adjustments. Since then, we really haven't. We've got to get caught up in that area." Since he arrived, he had seen a $15 million indoor practice facility built, players-only dorm, the locker room was renovated. Looks like something out of a sci-fi movie, Corey Clark wrote. Players have their own arcade and movie theater. You know, one of the highest-paid coaching staffs in the country. Dude, people have every right to be pissed off at him for saying that. A few little adjustments? Are you kidding me? Dude, you get to play an ACC schedule with SEC-type support. That's ridiculous. So, yeah, not good there. So he's definitely alienating some boosters. I think he's also alienating some media that's been real, extremely comfy with him. I don't know if you caught that or not.
I did. I think I knew exactly.
You're talking about a guy that has carried his water for years. Donated like a lot of stuff, man. Extremely tight, and for that stuff to get written, that tells me that maybe Fisher. I don't know if he blew that relationship too, but that's not good.
Did Jimbo conscientiously hire average coaches after the big 2012 turnover to ensure continuity?
No. In fact, I think the betrayals that maybe have caused Jimbo to be overvaluing of the personality trait of loyalty happened post 2012. So no, I don't think so. With Jimbo Fisher always talking about the college ball arms race, do you think it's wise of him to consider hiring analytics persons to his support staff this offseason? This may help him in such areas as better understanding fourth down math. If so, Bud, you'd be a perfect fit for the job. Looking forward to your response and go Noles. Okay, number one, I don't think I'd be a perfect fit for that job because I'm actually not that good at math. I think I am pretty good at taking some of the stuff that I understand, like the fourth down math-wise and the probabilities there, and explaining it to an audience. But if you're going to hire a hardcore analytics guy, you want a guy with like a pretty serious math degree, I think, who can really dig down and find very team-specific advantages game to game. And there are actually services that do that. I don't know if Florida State subscribes to one of those. I guess we could Freedom of Information Act. Or if you're an audience member, you can. Florida State, State School. I'm sure they'd love to fill some of those. do I think it's wise to hire an analytics person? Yeah, absolutely. I think they should. I think it, you know, that's one of the major deficiencies of Fisher as a coach, unfortunately.
I think it'd be nice. The question is Jimbo going to listen to it? I'm not sure.
Exactly.
I mean,
if he doesn't listen to his assistant coaches, is he going to listen to some nerd with a pocket square?
Is he going to listen to some PhD with a sports science background? I don't know.
If Nick had one, probably.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
All right.
Well, he'd have one on a staff anyway. He might not listen to him, but he'd have one just to fill it.
Yeah. Buttonegger, great podcast product. I love it. Hope you won't quit on us. Got this question for the next mailbag. Obvious question, begs to be asked. Why can't Jimbo Fisher get his freshman quarterback ready to play? Week in and week out, scenes with true freshmen, for example, Virginia Tech, and showing out why the hell is Jimbo Fisher trying to boil the damn ocean? Bigger question, why do we even have a kid who's been on campus less than 5 months playing? When will JJ Where's the Beer At going to free up a roster spot? And at this point, is JF just really playing not to get blown out in every game remaining, as opposed to trying to actually game plan to win? This is a lot to unpack. I'm actually going to side with Jimbo here a little bit on this. I think that getting a true freshman quarterback ready to play is a lot harder than some of the fans think. And pointing to Georgia, which I get, is Virginia Tech's kid actually a true freshman or is he a redshirt?
Fromm's a true freshman.
Yeah, but Va Tech's kid is
I can't speak to Virginia Tech's kid.
Look, the vast majority of true freshman quarterbacks, especially those who don't enroll early like Blackman did not, are not going to have year one success, especially not when you play the toughest schedule in America, as Florida State has done so far, and it's by a huge margin. So I really don't fault him for that too much. There are some things that I think that are kind of telling. I do question at times whether Fisher is actually playing like to maximize the wins on this current schedule, or if, realizing that this season is totally screwed, he is instead trying to give his quarterback as many developmental reps as possible to develop him for the next year while still trying to win the game. Does that make sense? Like, I do think there's ways he could actually try to win the game more if that was his actual goal. But with each passing game, I'm becoming a little bit less convinced that it is, Edgar.
Interesting. I mean, look, Jake Fromm is great. He's a true freshman. Go look at what Georgia's actually asking him to do. I think he threw the ball 7 times against Florida. 4 of them were caught. I mean, something – go and look at his per-game stats. It's pretty minimal what's going on there. So I know it's easy to look at a team that's undefeated and look at how they're using their freshman quarterback, but that's not like a great example of getting a kid ready to play and then turning him loose and he's playing at a high level where he's a feature point of the offense.
The coaching given to Jake or to James Blackman is not, in my opinion, one of Florida State's primary concerns right now. It's just not. Like, they have much bigger concerns. By the way, at Notre Dame, which was the only good defense they've I guess Fromm did see a pretty decent defense in Florida, but only threw 7 passes. Notre Dame, the only time that Fromm has actually been forced to throw as opposed to choosing to throw, he was 16 of 29 for a 141 with a touchdown of the pick. So that's a quarterback rating of 100, which is not very good at all.
As far as the question that was just asked, I mean, look, Constantino was a miss. There was some shiny big arm, big physical frame, just didn't work out. You had one kid in Henry that was interested in things outside of the football field. And you had another kid who just sabotaged himself completely acted out of character and had to be removed from the program. So there's just been a wild streak of events here at quarterback that led to having a kid that's been on campus for 5 months be your starter. All right, bud. A lot of great questions tonight and a lot of things that not just a simple yes, no here. So we'll take a quick moment from questions. Want to remind people of our fantastic sponsor For the Table Restaurant Group, Madison Social, Centrale, Township, all fantastic options right there in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium. And want to particularly remind people anytime that they get to Tallahassee, that it's important to support our sponsors, particularly this year. But with Parents Weekend coming up, you made a comment a couple weeks ago. I thought it was very, very accurate that really all three of those properties are fantastic in that they're very accessible, high-quality experience, but also welcoming, and you could take a parent there. You could go there as a 30-something visiting the campus again for the first time in 10 years. You could go there as an undergrad. It's a great place that has a lot of appeal kind of across the board.
Yeah, it's called College Town, right, where they're at. But, you know, like I've had friends from out of town there who didn't go to Florida State, like, really want to go to College Town? I was like, yeah, I mean, it's not just for college kids. It just happens to be by the campus. So it really is a great place to go, all three of them. And they're also, you know, they're Knoll-owned businesses. Their owners are FSU grads, and it's great to support, you know, support local business, you know, as opposed to a bunch of chains. And two other fun things to tell you about. Certainly hit them up for this weekend for Parents Weekend, but also on Wednesday, because Florida State is 2-5, and that sucks, they had their 2-5 happy hour where between 2 and 5 p.m., you get your second drink from the happy hour menu on them. So that's pretty cool. Also, you can sit outside on the patio. It's nice, cool weather now, and enjoy a nice little skillet of their BLT dip, which is really good and would be delicious right about now because it's pretty cold. So anyway, Mattis Social, Township Centrale, and all into College Town. And then now, Soto, their new awesome bakery out in Midtown. So hit them up. Thank you for their faithful support of the Knollcast. All right, I'll read the next one. A little podcast overlap here. A question for y'all inspired partly by something they discussed recently on PAPN. Anyway, Godfrey recently noted, and I've heard it before, that every AD, every single one, has a short list for head coach if it came to that. So who do you think would be on Wilcox's? I know things change. I know Jimbo is not likely to leave, all things being equal. I know there could be candidates who could be foreseeable. But just right now, who would you think would be on that list he has in his back pocket? Neil Brown, Scott Frost, Fedora, I know, but before this year, it wouldn't seem ridiculous, right? Kiffin? I really hope that the number one candidate's Willie Taggart for a couple reasons.
Name that was coming out of my mouth.
Yep. That dude is one of the best recruiters in America, period. Like, he gets players. He's from Florida. He went to Bradenton Manatee, which is Tommy Frazier's old school. He's an excellent hire of coaches, right? I mean, he has Cristobal as his offensive line coach. He has Jim Leavitt as his defensive coordinator. He's got a squad out there at Oregon. They're doing very well on the field, despite the fact that they've lost their top two quarterbacks on the year. I think Willie Taggart would win a national championship at Florida State, just like Jimbo Fisher did, period. I think he would get ridiculous recruiting classes in here, and I think he does a great job of letting his players play. He doesn't bog them down with an unnecessary complexity. He, if you want his coaching background, he turned around Western Kentucky and did a great job there. That's not a program of many resources. He took USF when it had Skip Holtz and turned them around big time and left the roster completely stocked for Charlie Strong. He's putting together a great recruiting class at USF. I think he's a strong coach, would also be his first African-American coach. And somebody asked me, who's the number one guy you don't want to see at UF? From an FSU perspective. And I said, Taggart, by far, because I think he would smoke Florida State on the recruiting trail. So that would be my choice for Florida State. Getting players is the most important thing in college football. It's why Jimbo Fisher is so good, because he gets players. It's why Mark D'Antonio and Gary Patterson don't have rings. It's not that they're not great coaches on game day or great development, great at developing. They are. They just don't get the top line player. And I absolutely know that Taggart would get amazing players at Florida State. And honestly, I like his coaching background too. I think being a Harbaugh, David Shaw guy is not a bad thing. But he doesn't run their offense, actually. He runs kind of his own version of a spread running offense, which is kind of neat. So anyway, I think Taggart would be my top choice. Neil Brown, the coach at Troy, would be interesting for sure. Scott Frost, I don't know how much seasoning he has, really. Fedora, it would be a hard sell, I think, given the year he's having. Lane Kiffin has so much baggage, but so much potential, certainly. I would also look at Jeff Brohm really hard.
That's another name I was going to mention.
And I think you absolutely have to call Justin Fuente, but I just don't know that he would leave Virginia Tech. I mean, from everything I hear, he's very happy there. Ingram, what's your list look like?
Two guys you listed. Taggart would have been first. I don't know that I would have included anybody on the list that the questionnaire submitted, but yeah, and then Braun was the other one. So, you know, still probably a year or two away from that conversation, worst case scenario. Absent somebody making a run at Fisher and hiring him away. So something to think about, something to have in the back of our mind, but I think this may be like a...
Hey, man, we were the first to say they didn't make major changes after NC State, I think, and other podcasts are now there. Welcome to the show, guys. Month late, but hey, better late than never, right? You know, once you're absolutely positively sure something's going to happen, you can jump on board and say it needs to happen. Ingram, I've followed FSU close since 2007, been a listener to your podcast since 2014, and look forward to each one every week. I have a few questions after watching the Boston College game. Whew, does he ever? All right. Will Jimbo Fisher ever adopt an up-tempo offense? It seems that this offense operates better at a faster no-huddle pace. I know it's a small sample size, but this two-minute offense, like no-huddle, before the half has gotten points up for them quite a bit. How does he not see that his slow offense isn't working? Will he ever run the quarterback more? This is embarrassing to watch, especially when he takes all the pride in play calling with his own plays. He needs to take a look at some spread offenses like Clemson or even Oklahoma State-type offense and incorporate that into his scheme. It would show the talent gap against most opponents and wouldn't be as complex as current system. We can get 4 and 5-star receivers on the field before their junior year. Do you think you'll bring in a better co-coordinator that would incorporate these changes, or do you think FSU won't have a spread offense under Jimbo? Love your podcast and give it 5 stars on iTunes. Keep up the good work, guys. So we got a lot to unpack here. I'm going to take my cursor and I think put them at each question. All right. Will Jimbo ever adopt an up-tempo offense? If that means like top third in the country in pace, I'm going to say no. Do I have some hope that he will increase the pace moderately and not be like 129th in the nation out of 130 teams? Yeah, I think there's a possibility of that.
Pretty skeptical, man. A guy seems dead-ass set in his ways. We'll have to see what happens. A lot of stubbornness surrounding some of the decisions that Jimbo Fisher's making right now. I'd love to think that we speed our pace of play up and the tempo, and I'd like to see us really reevaluate a lot of things that – just the macro in which we address the game, but haven't seen anything other than my own want to make me think that's going to happen currently.
Ingram, I do have an update on Florida State's pace. Do you want to know where they rank now after the Boston College game? We do this every week. This is kind of fun.
Please let me know.
Last week they were, what, 128th?
Yes.
The previous week they were 129th. This week they were up to 125th. So take that, five other teams behind them. That's pretty solid. Yeah, I think there's just so little space for them to go down, right? Like, it would be almost impossible for them to go slower without taking delay of game penalties every snap. So I think there's some possibility he will increase the pace somewhat. It really doesn't make sense for him not to use pace because they have so much defensive depth and opponents do not. So, like, I would much rather have FSU's defensive backups than other teams' defensive backups. Yet they sit on the bench and they don't develop and they don't get to play compared to guys on the other teams. Will he ever run the quarterback more? How does he not see that his slow offense isn't working? Because he's got his nose buried in the playbook. Go watch him like when they're down, was it 28-3, I think, there in the late in the third, early in the fourth. He's like frantically flipping through his play sheet, man. It's all jumbled up. It looks like some stupid Indiana Jones movie where, like, God, you know, the walls are going to close in on me really quick unless I can quickly find this spell and yell out the magic word. The answer's not in there, Jimbo. You're down 28-3. The answer is within you about changing the program. It's not in the playbook. Mm-hmm. But I think he's so focused on like the execution details that he doesn't see the big picture. Part of that's also because he has to micromanage everybody because he's retained a bunch of his guys on his staff who he ultimately, I think, realizes he doesn't trust. But, you know, that's kind of different conversation. And you get to that because you don't take out the trash when necessary, or you don't trim the fat when necessary, year after year, and all of a sudden you have a big pile. Will they ever run the quarterback more?
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah.
I'll just throw it in real quickly. I'll say I could see that happening because I've seen him do that before. So I think that's not some wild, fanciful idea that you have to kind of hold on and hope that you might see more of that from Jimbo Fisher.
So here's some complaints that I've actually heard from guys on his staff. I've heard them complain that, you know, half a yard, 1 yard on a split should not doom a play from the start. I've heard them complain that Jimbo doesn't really see one-on-one matchups, even if the the receiver has a big-time advantage over the corner, as an actual thing to go at and attack, right? He just tries to keep within the framework of the play as opposed to actually exploiting specific matchups, like, you know, trying to get your best receiver matched up on their bad corner. I've heard guys complain that Fisher wants too many complicated blocking schemes, especially in pass protection, which leads to, instead of letting your guys use their athleticism and their talent, they have to think too much. It causes them to play too passive. And we seem to, and I think the evidence sometimes backs this up, they seem to have a lot of busts, right? And mm-hmm. just guys running free, which, hey, maybe that suggests that there are too many things being asked of a really good offensive line coach, who I think, like, as far as technique and stuff, is pretty good. But why can't he get his guys to play better as a unit? Maybe too much is being put on them.
Might even lead to a mixtape of your quarterback getting the absolute crap kicked out of him over a 16-month period of time.
Yeah. Maybe that could be used on the recruiting trail, so that we've heard about. I also think that there are complaints about, specifically this year, that where is the bootleg game gone? The opposing defensive end, and in this scheme, you don't block him, right? Because you're supposed to hold him with the backside. If you're in the gun, it's the threat of the zone read, which, yeah, right. Or if you're under center, it's the threat of the bootleg. But unfortunately, Florida State does neither of those things often enough to hold the backside. And so these run plays are actually getting hit by the backside defender, who is, by design, and a good design, by the way, not being blocked. But Florida State does not apply the appropriate constraints on the defense to keep them honest. So they chase the backside of these run plays with impunity, and you get all these tackles for loss. And if I'm an offensive lineman, I'm pretty ticked that you make me look so bad, when in fact we are not even supposed to be blocking that guy that made the tackle. The quarterback action, which is not happening, is supposed to be holding him via threat. So that's something to look at there. I do think I agree with you that as far as the potentially running the quarterback more down the line. Do I think he'll bring in a co-coordinator that incorporate these changes, or do you think FSU won't have a spread off? No, I did not think he'll have a spread offense under Jimbo. No, definitely not. That's not who he is. It's just not going to happen. And I don't necessarily think they need one, right? You can be successful like this. You just can't be successful if you are this slow and you don't value each possession via, like, really, really miscalculating fourth down math consistently. Like, there's the red zone, but now I call it the dead zone, and that's the 21 to the 45 for Jimbo. That's where his offense goes to die. Bad terms this year. We have Jim botches and the dead zone.
Dead zone, yep.
Oh, here's one. Went to our first game this season in Tally. Just wanted to say thank you to our sponsors at Madso and Township for helping my friends and I forget the very sorry excuse of a coaching staff we have in Tallahassee for one night. That's from Stephen Klein. So, Stephen, thank you very much. If you compliment our sponsors, it increases the chance that we read your question on air by a lot. Unfortunately, Stephen did not actually ask a question. He just gave a shout-out to our sponsors, which is also cool. But if you want to get a question on air mentioning how much you enjoy Madso, assuming you actually went there and do enjoy it, is a good way to get on air.
Hi, guys. Great job on everything you do in covering Florida State. You seem to give it to us straight, which is appreciated. My questions, actually several questions, are, do you think that Jimbo will potentially hire a defense coordinator who is linebacker-oriented, or will he be likely to stay with what he has historically done and pursue a defense coordinator who is a secondary coach? Why don't we approach that one first before we get into the other layers of the question?
I have not spoken to Jimbo about this. However, we have interviewed him about this in the past. In the press scrum, and he said that he believes that a defense coordinator should call the defense back to front, essentially, which means DB coach. So that's encouraging there. I also think that it's very possible Florida State goes with a corner coach and a secondary coach in its new iteration of the coaching staff, which I assume will come. And so you might have, it may be that your defense coordinator is the safeties coach and you have a separate corner coach or vice versa.
Also, do you think the extra coaching slot will be used for the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side?
Oh, that's a good question. I think probably on the defensive side of the ball.
I'm not sure that decision's been made yet, but we'll see. We'll see. Would it be prudent to hire a defensive coordinator who's just a defensive coordinator and have actual position coaches specific for each level of the defense?
No, the math doesn't work out on that, because what's that guy doing during practices? Like, is he just going around all units? I don't know any defensive coordinator out there who doesn't coach a position, mm-hmm. right? I think that, because here's the deal. The way you format practice is you have individual period and you have team period, so you need to you need to maximize your exposure to these guys. I don't think that makes much sense.
All right, bud. Next question is, I stuck with my pledge not to watch Florida State for the rest of the year, and thank God for that. Had a nice dinner with my wife, told her 3 weeks ago that Saturdays were officially free for the foreseeable future out here on the West Coast instead, but kept getting texts from a friend who played D1 safety in the Pac-12 saying our secondary looked confused and lost. After this, I assume Fisher does not have to start quietly telling recruits that he's cleaning house, but I digress. I did not see the game. You are not so lucky as you have to cover it. I would happily send you a care package or anything that would help you get through this, booze, dark glasses, some device to disconnect your cable, sedatives, a puppy, a couple other things that could be interpreted as one way or another. Anyway, well, there's a second page and more to this question. Hang in there. At some point in the season, this season will mercifully end and we can focus on something fun like politics or North Korea. Truly feel sorry for the kids who thought they were joining an elite program, and hell, their parents too. I could not blame any player for strongly considering a transfer. There's a lot of good football out there. It would be interesting but depressing to see an article calculating the negative economic impact of a horrible season on Tallahassee businesses.
So on this, we actually know some Tallahassee businesses, right, including our sponsors. And from what I know and talk to some Tallahassee businesses, I don't think they're going to see much reduced attendance this year because of two things, right? You have Parents Weekend and you have the country concert. So from what I understand, those tickets are already sold and there's just not many tickets left, right? So they think people are going to come. Parents Weekend always happens and the parents always show up just because they want to see their kids, right? Like the football team's record doesn't really impact that. And a lot of people who bought tickets to the concert, in my opinion, are still going to come as well. And I don't think that the football team's quality is really going to deter them on that, considering the game wasn't any good anyway, because it's, what, Delaware State, I think, is the concert date?
Yeah.
However, like Stephen A. Smith here, if they don't get stuff changed, man, I'm telling you, I think that they have serious, serious season ticket issues next year.
Absolutely. If you've got a bunch of dead wood floating around here and you've got the feelings of a program that are just kind of making its way down the river before you have a major change, that doesn't play well with any fan base, this one in particular. And we've talked about it ad nauseum, but Tallahassee, speaking of someone who wants to get to Tallahassee a hell of a lot more than he does, Tallahassee logistically is a hard place to get to. And if you plant the seed in anybody's mind as to, maybe I won't go this weekend, it can lead to disappointing weekends, both in the football stands and for the surrounding businesses pretty quickly.
So we didn't actually ask for this, but people have been sending us forwarding us their emails that they've been sending to the boosters, right? About, like, these are people who actually have season tickets. Here's one. Good evening. I'm writing to inform you that I will not make my annual contribution to Seminole Boosters for next year unless significant changes are made to Coach Fisher's staff. I love Coach Fisher. I wanted to stay for a long time. And they have everything he needs. But changes must be made. Florida State football has too much talent and tradition to accept the current state of the program. I care about my football team so much that I just felt I had to say something. Talks about how he recently came into a position to be able to afford to donate even more and would love to do so. Said the paperwork has been on his table for the past few weeks. However, it's not going to happen unless changes to the coaching staff are made. So he says, I look forward to cheering on my Noles to new heights in the future. With best wishes, Chris. And there's a pretty good number of those. I don't know. I don't think we ever actually asked for that, but that is interesting. A lot of people are not happy with it, and I think that they've, like, look, I already bought my tickets for this year. I'm going to go to the games because I already got my tickets, but I don't know if they want to sign up for another year of that if serious changes aren't made. People want to have something to believe in, you know? They want to believe that either the program's on the rise or that it's going to be well-maintained and that its management is competent. And right now, a lot of people don't have much reason to believe that. Just watching the mindset that Georgia's defense plays with and how every player on defense wants to destroy anything that moves when FSU hires an EDC, is that something that a new defensive coordinator could bring? Or is Jimbo's message in the system/process what yields the team's mindset?
It's a good question.
I think that a seek and destroy mindset is definitely at the top of Jimbo Fisher's want list. However, I think that's a product of good coaching, right? And of players who are confident in their scheme and understand what is being asked of them and have been taught well. I don't think it's something you can say, all right, guys, go seek and destroy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's far too easy.
I'm sure Charles Kelly tells people we're going to run hard, we're going to hit, I mean, no defense coordinator I've ever had any experience with as a whole vocabulary that doesn't basically center around the basic premise of running and hitting on defense.
I totally agree.
I will say real quickly, Bud, you don't see a whole lot of excitement and extra effort on any side of the ball or special teams or anything right now. So I know it's quick to blame Kelly for a lot of things and there's a lot of frustrations, but if you're looking for kind of the intangibles that are displayed and emotion and kids fully excited about what they're doing, you don't see a whole lot of that anywhere else.
I agree. Would you be inspired to play for Jimbo this year?
Be tough. Be real tough.
Yeah, I agree. So if FSU does not make a bowl game, would Fisher be able to begin the fire/hire process sooner? And if so, is that an advantage? I think that when you have a quarterback like Blackman, especially if we don't know if Francois is going to be back, that you want as many bowl practices with him as possible. So I'm going to say that any slight advantage, look, if Florida State makes a bowl, it's not going to be a good one. You know, it's going to be one that's going to happen very soon after the season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're having to wait till, you know, like after the national championship game or something to make a hire or two. But I think you want those bowl practices with Blackman simply because I do believe Jimbo's a good quarterback coach and he would be able to work with Blackman for 15 extra practices. I think that that's certainly an advantage that you want. Love the show. I listen to every episode. And also, I've made everyone I know buy Louisiana hot sauce. That is awesome. My question is for Bud. Bud, on November 26, 2012, you wrote the following article about Jimbo Fisher's five-year plan to give up play calling and also his 10-year plan and vision for the program. He planned to hand off play calling duties as part of a five-year plan. This would be year five in that, I believe. Jimbo went on to say he had a 10-year plan as well. Any thoughts on how this is going? Poorly. Although actually years one, two, and three of that five-year plan, assuming that it started in 2013, were pretty nice. Has anyone mentioned anything about handing off play calling duties in the future? 2017 minus 2012 equals 5 years. Thanks again and keep up the great work, guys. Well, I know I haven't heard it mentioned. No, that may be something we can bring up for him. You know, we'll remind him of his own words there, certainly. He did ask for some suggestions today.
He did. He did. He opened the floor. So
I have 1,200 words written on this that I'm going to drop either Tuesday or Wednesday. They're not very nice.
Look forward to it, Bud. Let's get to two more questions here.
All right.
Having 9 assistants in college football and Jimbo being a hands-on offensive guy, it's never made sense to me that he's structured the coaching staff with 5 offensive assistants and 4 defensive assistants. With changing multiple coaches seeming likely, wouldn't it make more sense to go with 4 offensive assistants and 5 defense?
The question does not account for the additional coach, which we already know is coming. Right? Like by rule, now you get 10 assistants, right? Not 9.
Right.
So I don't know how to answer this.
So I guess under this guy's situation, wouldn't it make sense to have 6 and 5 with the idea that you have an additional 1 in Fisher?
I think the new thing will be 5 and 5 plus Jimbo, most likely.
Or, that's what I mean. You're not going to have 12 coaches. Excuse me.
Right. Yeah, I think 5 and 5 plus Jimbo makes a lot of sense. If you were going to go like 4 and 6 plus Jimbo, meaning the 6 on offense, then I guess you could potentially just have 1 D-line coach, but I don't think they'll do that. Okay. Also, assuming Patrick returns for senior year, Cam Akers more than likely becomes the feature back moving forward. How confident do you feel that Laybourne and White are both sticking around when touches will be minimal, going off the history of Jimbo and how he distributes carries? I think they'll both stick around for at least another year and evaluate their options because none of them are actually in a good position to transfer, given that they don't have their associate's degrees. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think either of them want to go like transfer out and go the JUCO route. Also, I think that they still have – most of these players still have a pretty good amount of faith that Florida State will get it right, even if they don't necessarily have a lot of faith in some of the members of the coaching staff. Last one here. I'm growing addicted to the podcast in spite of terrible team results. If Shark Mac gets canned and Jimbo could replace any of our staff with any of the current UF staff, would any Gator coach be an automatic upgrade? If so, how likely would it be for Jimbo to actually pursue these folks? Well, let's look here at who is on UF's coaching staff. I don't want to miss anybody. Ingram, they still list Jim McElwain, which is not accurate.
He's no longer head coach. No.
All right. Randy Shannon, no. He's actually the current head coach there. Doug Nussmeier, I would say no. I think Corey Bell does a pretty good job with Florida's defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kerry Dixon as receivers coach could be interesting. Juwan, yeah.
Yeah.
Juwan, dude,
yeah.
Is a hell of a recruiter. would like him on staff quite a bit. Brad Davis is actually a pretty damn good recruiter, their offensive line coach. I don't know if he's actually a good coach of offensive line, though. Like, that is an area of the Gators that has been disappointing this year when it was supposed to be a strength. So, I don't know. I think you really need a guy who's a really good coach on the offensive line as opposed to a great recruiter. You know? I mean, if you can get both, that's awesome. But I understand if you can't. Also, Ingram, it is now time to do our weekly University of Florida run defense update. This is a feature that we've been doing because, holy cow, is Florida's run defense bad. We track how well they do against opposing running backs. So taking out the sacks and other stuff. How do you think the Georgia game
impacted? We mentioned Fromm's passing statistics earlier. So interesting to see what the other side looks like.
Yeah, Georgia had 33 running back carries, Ingram. 33. 10 for 18, 4 for 49, 13 for 77, and 6 for a buck 37. So that's 33 for 281. So that brings their season totals to 195 carries by opposing running backs, 1,042 yards for a nice 5.3 yards per carry allowed to opposing backs.
Still healthily over that 5 yard a carry.
I thought they were going to get under it because they went 3.0 to Vanderbilt, 3.9 to LSU and 2.2 to A&M, but Georgia hit him with 8.85, and that spiked that number right back up. So, yeah, that's a lot. And that still gives me some encouragement that Florida State could actually win that game in Gainesville.
It'd be nice and be one of the few things to look back on with fondness from this year. And if anything, at least Gainesville has been a consistent source of humor over the recent period of time, perhaps when we've needed it most. So
I think they're going to hire Dan Mullen, by the way.
Yeah, that seems to be. And I would love that. I would don't want Taggart anywhere around there. And don't really need Scott Frost taking over at Florida either. Dan Mullen is a good coach and would do well there, but is the lesser.
I think he would do a pretty damn good job.
Lesser of the evils. At least, you know, if we're going to evaluate him and recruit, I'm not sure the ceiling's there, but probably a very, very significant floor that comes with hiring Dan Mullen.
I think I agree. Yes, I think that if you're an AD, you have to remember that some of your priorities are different than like the fan priorities, because the fan priorities are more about ceiling. But an AD has to consider floor as well.
Exactly.
Exactly right. All right, guys. I think that we're out of questions for this week. Please hit us with those 5-star reviews on iTunes. You can continue to send us questions. We got so many this week. It's hard to pick through all these. We almost need to hire like a question intern to like categorize them and sort them and just, you know, have them ready for us so we can eliminate duplicates or order them in some more manageable way. Hit us up with those 5-star reviews on iTunes for sure. And we will see you again when they preview the exciting Syracuse game against Florida State, and Florida State is somehow favored by 5.5 points at home because despite all the coaching, they still cannot eliminate the physical talent, and I don't think Vegas has any idea what to think of this team right now.
This concludes this episode of the Nolcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Write us at thenolcast@gmail.com or tweet us at Nolcast. Another day, another loss. Hello, darkness, my old friend. Speaking of darkness, it's October 31st. 2017. Have a happy Halloween. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.